Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So, as you no doubt know by now, Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich refuses to resign from his job after being charged with a pay-to-play scheme over the vacant Senate seat left by President-elect Barack Obama and also other alleged schemes. In a recent statement, the defiant governor quoted the poem If by Rudyard Kipling as though falling back on the sentiments of a literary figure could somehow polish his own tarnished character. In case you missed his statement from last Friday afternoon, here is Blagojevich reciting part of the Kipling poem.
Rudyard Kipling wrote, "If you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs and blaming it on you, if you can trust yourself when all men doubt you and make allowance for their doubting too, if you can wait and not be tired by waiting or being lied about, don't deal in lies, or being hated, don't give way to hating. Now I know there are some powerful forces arrayed against me. It's kind of lonely right now. But I have on my side the most powerful ally there is, and it's the truth."
All right, so Blagojevich invoking the truth right after reading Kipling. And, you know, who knew that the Chicago Press Corps was so savvy as to recognize that there was a line missing from If the way Blagojevich read it. And for those of you familiar with the poem, you may have noticed that missing line. And MSNBC's Rachel Maddow noticed, too, and enjoyed the delicious irony. Here she is, filling in the missing line.
You know what the very next line in the poem is that he conveniently stopped right before he read it? Next line is, "And yet, don't look too good, nor talk too wise." If you're Rod Blagojevich, you have to stop short of that line because you do look way too good and you do talk really awesomely Chicago style, way too wise.
Rachel Maddow on her show on MSNBC. And the move by Blagojevich has inspired plenty of internet chatter and a rewritten version of the poem by freelance journalist Claudia Rosette. You ready? This is called If Kipling Had Met Blagojevich. If you can keep your job while all about you are fielding bribes and blaming it on you, if you can duck the feds while all men doubt you and bleeping show the charges are untrue, if you can fight and not be tired by fighting or being wiretapped, profess surprise, or argue that there will be no indicting because it's all a bleeping pack of lies. And now we want to hear from you. Anything at all about poetry and politics, call us at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692, or post to our webpage, WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And with us, we have none other than Bob Holman, poet, proprietor of the Bowery Poetry Club, and poetry commentator for this program over the many years. Hi, Bob.
How's it doing, Brian?
All right. First, tell us about the intention of the Kipling poem, If, for real.
Well, you know, Kipling was one of the great imperialists. You know, his Charge of the Light Brigade, his books, Kim, and his coining the white man's burden as a political theory sort of gave him the first voice for what, you know, has become the British way of thinking at the time.
That's a great political legacy for Blagojevich to align
Isn't
himself
it?
With.
Don't forget that, though, the Kipling won the Nobel Prize and was the first English writer to do so, writer in English to do so.
For what?
This poem, If, won the BBC's Most Popular Poem of All Time Award in 1995. And you'll find it, I think, in every poster shop on Bleecker Street.
And yet, I read somewhere that poem was written for a Dr. Leander Jameson, who was famous for the bungled Jameson raid in South Africa that helped lead to the Boer War. Do you know if that's true?
That sounds absolutely true. Yeah, I don't know if it's true, but it sounds
True.
It sounds so Kipling.
If it isn't
true,
it should be true.
Absolutely. You know, he was a writer who really was able to capture the public ear, and he still is able to do that. He, you know, T.S. Eliot said of him that Kipling could write poetry on occasion, even if only by accident. And I think that even accidentally, Kipling could back his way into a bunch of lines that sound so right and so familiar that even Blagojevich could make it into, you know, his statement of purpose.
I like that about writing poetry even by accident. Donald Rumsfeld did that too, you know.
No, give me the lines.
Oh, the lines were... were frequent and many about the unknown knowns and the known knowns.
Very Eliotic. His,
many,
his
many, many.
I remember that. Yeah. But
you go to war with the arm. Anyway, go ahead.
The way that Blagojevich read these lines, he read them subtly enough so that, or poorly enough, I don't know, so that the rhyme scheme wasn't really emphasized, which is why you don't notice that he did drop the last line of the verse and left out the fact that he does look too good and does try to talk too wise in that Chicago sense. That Rachel Maddow piece was really
very
great.
Very funny. How obvious was that, though, if this is the most popular poem of all time, dropping the line that was going to make him look bad?
It seems like he could have at least managed to censor himself before he got that far into it. You know, he should have stopped before the quatrain that has the rhymed line. That's one of the first rules. If you're going to censor one of the lines, don't leave a rhyme dangling.
We did have the idea that since many people in the audience probably never heard the poem recited before, and now would have to go into the holiday with the stench of Blagojevich's reciting of Kipling on their brains, that we should hear an alternative reading. Are you ready? There are several here. See if you recognize the voices.
If you can dream but not make dreams your master, if you can think but not make thoughts your aim, if you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat these two imposters just the same, or bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things that you've given your life to broken and stoop and build them up again with worn-out tools. If you can make one heap of all your winnings and risk it in one turn of pitch and toss and lose and start again at your beginnings, never breathe a word about your loss.
That's one. We'll tell you who it was in a minute.
I'd vote Dennis Hopper.
You vote right.
Hey. He's a good reader, and I've heard him. He's done a lot of work with Burroughs, you know.
This next guy is more well-known for something he does in a whole other sphere of life. See if you can recognize this champion.
If you can dream and not make dreams your master. If you can think and not make thoughts your aim. If you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat these two imposters just the same.
You got it, Bob?
Tito?
Tito! Tito is a great guest, but they didn't have such high recording quality in his day.
You know, it does remind me of, do you remember when Sebastian Cabot did the album of Bob Dylan lyrics, reading
absolutely
them to
us? Tito. Okay, wait a minute. Let's put this out to our listeners. Let's have a little fun, okay, before we reveal it. We will play it one more time. And listeners, who is that reading Kipling? And the music was actually part of the event. This was a globally televised event, we should add. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Anybody know? Anybody want to guess? Shall we hear it again?
Oh, please.
If you can dream and not make dreams your master. If you can think and not make thoughts your aim. If you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat these two imposters just the same.
I'd rather hear that than some Christmas carol. Jennifer in Larchmont, you're on WNYC.
Is it the Dalai Lama?
That's a wonderful wrong guess. Steve in New York, you're on Steve in Manhattan. That was your guess too? Steve? Steve?
That was my guess, yes.
Two for the Dalai Lama.
How about that? Yeah.
Jim in Hoboken. Jim hung up. He was going to say Pavarotti.
Oh.
Interesting guess. Let's see. We have anybody else ready to go?
It's not the Stephanie guy who won the hot dog eating contest, is it, Brian?
Yeah, I thought that was Curtis Lee. Hi, who's this? You're on the air.
Hello, my name is Patricia Higgins. I think it's Rafael Nadal, the tennis player.
It was Rafael Nadal, and Rafi stick to tennis. Bob, what do you think?
Well, I think that this the sappiness of the poem is miraculously portrayed by the unintelligibility of that accent.
He was actually provided that to read upon winning Wimbledon.
Well, you know, Barack Obama has Elizabeth Alexander, the poet, reading at his inauguration. And I think it may be a new day for poetry. Elizabeth is a wonderful young poet who's written a book about the Venus Hottentot. It's just a fantastic poet that's going to, I think, find a different kind of ear and open up poetry to a new kind of poetry to a national audience.
We should invite her on the show, and I'll mention by way of segue across to tomorrow that after we finish up here today, the very next thing on our show will be our Christmas morning rerun, which will begin with our recent interview with Maya Angelou, who read at Clinton's inaugural. But wait, Lisa in Manhattan has something to say about all this Kipling stuff. Hi, Lisa.
Yeah, hi. I was just a little taken aback at the, you know, at the fun you're making of Kipling. He was far more complex. He was profoundly democratic. If you read works like Puck of Pook's Hill, and for that matter, if you analyze Kim and the other characters in Jungle Book, and if you read more and more of his poetry.
He wasn't just some imperialist.
No, he was far, far more than that. And it's kind of unfair to treat him this way.
It really is. Bob Holman?
Well, I'll tell you something. I think there is a point to that. And it's always, for example, when he wrote his poem, Battle of Luce, after his son died, this is the real if for me, because it seemed to contradict so much of the bravado and the white man's burden, which was his phrase of why colonization was necessary. But after his son was killed in battle, he said, "If any question why we died, tell them because our fathers lied." And I think that he did go through a lot of shifts during his life. You know, he was in South Africa. He was born and lived a lot of in India. Lived in the United States, but I think that in general, the tenor of if, you know, it's reaching for the stars was kind of out of his grasp. In my opinion. So I'm sticking with my original thoughts, though there is a complexity to them that's worth studying.
Lisa, thank you for that. And Ed in Chelsea knows more about why Nadal was asked to read that at Wimbledon. Hi, Ed.
Hi there.
So?
It's Ivan's friend, Ed.
Oh, hi, Ed.
The reason he's asked to do that is because when the players pass through the portal that connects the clubhouse to center court, that phrase is printed above the doorway, is lettered on a board above the doorway. So it was a very big deal that he be given that phrase to read, or that portion of the poem to read, because it's connected with Wimbledon Center Court so entirely.
A good colonialist post at Wimbledon?
Exactly.
Hey, thank you very much.
Bye.
Say hi to Ivan. And we have 20 seconds left, Bob Holman, for a final thought.
Well, I guess it would have to go that at least we're getting a poem into the national debate. I just wish that it were one that would carry with it meaning, like the way that Leopold Senghor, the founder of Senegal, was able to bring poetry and freedom together.
Maybe next year we'll do a project on match each of the 50 governors with the most appropriate poem. Bob Holman, poet, proprietor of the Bowery Poetry Club. Thanks a lot for joining us. Merry Christmas, everyone. Brian Lehrer on WNY.